Welcome to the Fire Time Podcast, where it's never hot enough, slow is fast, and the way to win is to make it so stupidly easy to buy from you that there's no excuse not to. I'm your host, Tim Reed. And once again, I'm so excited to be here today. Welcome to the Fire Time Podcast. Well, hey, as we hit the ground running with season 12, we are going to jump into a two-part series that's going to include some classes that I taught last year at the Mid-Atlantic HPBA conference. And this is something that I've been sitting on for a while now, but really wanted to share with you. Now, for this week's episode, I'm going to share the keynote address that I gave, and it's titled Blockbuster or Netflix: Why Now is the Time to Respond to the Market. And while I delivered this last year, I think that it is extremely relevant for where things are right now, because the market is changing and we don't have to cater to every whim and demand that the market has, but we do have to respond. And many companies have not done that. They continue to operate within the status quo, not realizing the shifting tide that is around them. So that's what we're going to hear this week. Next week, I'll play for you a class that I taught at this same conference that's about building a framework of sales management. And my hope is that both of these classes give you value. So with that said, I'm going to jump out of the way so that you can hear this keynote address, Blockbuster or Netflix: Why Now is the Time to Respond to the Market. So, okay, as we get started here, this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately for our industry. And when we think about this idea of Blockbuster versus Netflix, I'm sure a lot of images come to mind, right? When we think about the disruption that we've seen in the media space and music over the last 20, 30 years, it's been very, very rapid how it's happened, right? And I think that, you know, music is an industry that took a little bit more time. And the Blockbuster Netflix thing happened seemingly really, really quick, right? All of a sudden, Blockbuster was gone, and then Netflix is all that we have. But to start today out, I want to show you guys a picture, and I want to ask a question. So do any of you guys know what this is right here? Like, what this exact picture is? Original store, that's a good thought. The last one. This is the last functioning Blockbuster video, and it is in Bend, Oregon, about 3 hours from my house. No joke. It is the last one. It's still a business. You can go in and, I mean, I assume rent a DVD or a VHS, but for most of us that drive by, it's like driving by one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, right? I mean, it's just a relic from times past. But one thing that's really, really interesting is the story of Blockbuster. So do any of you guys know why Blockbuster went out of business? Wouldn't go online? Any other thoughts too on that?
They alienated their customers with late
fees. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah, alienated customers with late fees. So Blockbuster did a lot of things. And there was a lot of disruption. There was Redbox, there was Netflix, there was a lot of companies that were vying for that market. But what's amazing is that 23 years ago, literally 23 years ago, Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix. In the year 2000, Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix, and they chose not to. And the reason is because they believed that their existing business model of bringing customers to them, offering a great showroom, amazing displays, really good customer service, would triumph over the Netflix model of bringing the product to the customer. Now, I know there's no comparisons at all to our industry in their business model, but try to you know, think with me here. The Blockbuster's model was built on playing defense. They felt like their model of playing defense, bring the customer to us, would triumph over the Netflix model of playing offense, bringing the product to the customer. And when you think about this, I believe right now that there is a really serious problem in our industry, and it's that the market has changed and we haven't. And you can tell me all about the amazing new products we're coming out with, how gas fireplaces are better than ever, and they're doing the coolest stuff, and we're getting into electric fireplaces and screen technology and water vapor. you know, ethanol. We can talk about getting into the outdoors and fire pits and, you know, great looking fireplaces so that there's a fireplace for every space to win that market share and incidence rate. But the market's changed and we haven't. And what we have seen over the last really 10 years is a major, major shift in the way that business is done. And this isn't in our industry, this is just across our society. And the model has changed from bring the customer to the product to bring the product to the customer. What's an example of just like a thing in your day-to-day lives where that's true? Amazon, yeah. How many here have an Amazon Prime subscription? I thought you guys supported local businesses. What are you doing here? Why is Amazon Prime so convenient? But don't you want to go to the store and see it first? Now, different products have different purchasing behaviors. There's no question about that. But if you look at this, I mean, it's a major shift that's happened in any market. Pick the market. It has moved from bring the product to, or bring the customer to the product, to bring the product to the customer. Everywhere this has happened. You know, I got some examples here. So like Uber, pretty easy to see that. They've changed the cab industry forever. I live in Portland, Oregon. It's rainy a lot. So if I don't have to stand out in the rain and I can sit in the restaurant and know who's picking me up, what the license plate number is, see their rating and know where they are, I can have another beverage with my friends or my wife before going out to wait in the rain. It's like I'm never going to go outside in the rain again. You know, Amazon, DoorDash, but grocery stores do this. How do grocery stores bring the product to you? Yeah, like even just curbside delivery. Now, they may not be able to make it like a pizza where they bring it straight to your house, but they're doing whatever they can within the scope of their business to bring the product to the customer and make it easier for the customer. But I would argue in our industry, we are continually making things harder and harder and harder for the customer because our products have gotten more complicated over the last 10 years. Our buying process has become more difficult while everything else in the world is getting easier. So we've been actively moving the wrong direction for how consumers like to buy. And it doesn't mean that the sky is falling necessarily, but it does mean that if we continue to dig our heels in the sand and do things the way that we've been doing them, we will one by one alienate our customers and we'll die the death of 1,000 cuts, which has already started. You know, the data that's reported to HPBA, roughly 50% of the fireplaces sold every year are sold on the internet. And that's what's reported. So if you think about that as retailers, over the last 20 years, and if you're a distributor or a manufacturer that is kept in business by your retailers, over the last 20 years, we have given away half of our industry. It's gone. We're not getting it back. We've given it away. But because we keep growing 4%, 5%, 6% every year, we think things are good. You know, and that's not everybody, but I think that that's us in general as an industry. So it doesn't matter where it is right here. You can go to virtually any kind of business, even a restaurant, and they're trying to find ways to bring themselves to you. You know, even offering like online reservations, a virtual tour of the restaurant, looking at the menu in their own way. That's a restaurant which can't physically move, doing their best to bring themselves to the customer, right? Doesn't mean we have to become Amazon, doesn't mean we have to become Uber, but we got to ask the question, how can we make it easier to buy from us? How can we remove friction so that people can deal with us in a way they expect when they deal with other businesses? Does that make sense? Okay, so as we talk about this, we're going to be focusing on three things today. I believe fundamentally that this has to start first in our marketing, next in our websites, and finally in our showrooms. I think that that's where it has to start. And in every single one of these spaces, we have to figure out how can we play offense instead of defense. Now, when it comes to marketing, we'll tackle that first. When it comes to marketing, the first thing is our marketing has to be clear and it has to be connected. So if you look at this right here, what's this company do? Make your fireplace safe, right? Pretty clear. Yeah. What do they offer? What do they offer to do that? I know it's kind of small. Custom size safety screens for your gas fireplace. Like, is there any guesswork of what they offer. They're an example of a company that is very, very clear, a simple barrier between you, hot glass, and a serious burn injury. So that's an example of clarity. In today's world, as people are getting hit with thousands and thousands of ads per day, anything that's not specific for the customer and clear is just white noise. It doesn't cut through. That years ago, you know, you could try to come up with a really clever or creative catchphrase, and maybe it would stick. But in today's world, our brains are wired to filter out noise. Our brains filter it out. So unless the advertising and the marketing is specific to the customer and the problem that you're trying to solve, at best it's ignored and at worst it's disdained. Now, not only does marketing need to be clear, but it needs to be connected. So in general, if you think about many, you know, businesses today, their marketing is connected. One piece of marketing leads to this, which leads to this, which leads to this. Like, you see this with email marketing. You see this with, like, you know, recognition ads and redirect ads on Facebook and Google and things like that. But everything is connected. And in our industry, typically, the way that we've done marketing, and I've made this mistake a million times. I'm pointing the finger at myself. I made this mistake a million times. The way that we do marketing traditionally is we have a one-off flash in the pan, whether it's a Memorial Day sale, or whether it's a manufacturer having an ad for a new fireplace or what have you. And we have some really clever catchphrase. We try to cram way too many things into the ad, and we hope it brings people into the store. And then it's done. But that's not the way the marketing can work today. Marketing's got to be connected step by step by step by step. Where does this piece lead? Okay, it leads here. Where does this piece lead? Okay, it leads here. Is the goal of this to book an appointment? Okay, if they book an appointment, what's the next piece of marketing that goes to them to get them to place the deposit? Okay, if they download our video on this new fireplace, do we send them a coupon for that specific model? How long is the coupon good for? What did they get hit with in between? Do they have a video of our installation team? We need connected marketing. And when we talk about this, I'll give you a couple examples here of clarity and connectedness. So I tried to block out the names of the innocent here, but I'll show you just a couple things. You know, so if your marketing's clear, it's white noise. And a lot of the marketing in our industry is exactly that. So this first piece, I've blanked out the manufacturer. This is an ad for dealers. Okay, so think about that. So the ad is specifically for dealers. And the copy says, blank is the master of the retrofit market. Not bad. We have the most versatile fireplaces on the market with consistent styling and SKU naming across brands. I'm not sure what that means. One, choose your fireplace size. Two, remove old fireplace without any major changes. Three, we have standard and custom shrouds to fit any opening. Four, ready to finish. Is anybody else confused on what this ad is trying to do? Yeah? And this is a great company. But it's not clear. Like, I don't know what this is or who this is for. Okay, here's one. The closer you look, the clearer the difference. I'm like, what are you like? And again, this is for a retailer. And if I'm like, what is a picture of a fake fireplace with a Photoshop flame burning inside? Like, I don't know what this is trying to get me to do. And as a result, at best it's ignored, and at worst it's disdained, because we're in an age right now where if it doesn't cut through, we just move on to the next thing. And as an industry, this is how we traditionally handle our marketing. But what we want to do with our marketing is we want to do two things. We want to explain how we solve our customer's problem, and we want to show what life will look like afterwards. And you can do that through pictures, you can do that through words, you can do that through a video. But what does this picture tell you right here? Safe. Yeah, how do you know it's safe? 100%. Like, could you think of some sales copy to write with that about a safety screen, about thermostat control to make sure it's always the right temperature, make sure it's not too hot? Like, there's a lot of things that you could do with that, because that picture shows us what does life look like for the people that we're helping. Now, up here, I know it's a little bit small, but if we talk about how we can solve our customers' problems, here's an example of some copy. Finding a fireplace can be a new hassle. Confusing industry websites. There's no simple way to get a price for a project. Insider language that doesn't make any sense. The process seems really complicated. Are those all true? It shouldn't be difficult to upgrade your fireplace. Our team will make it simple to understand which options could work in your home and what the project will cost. Get online estimate. Do you guys see how that addresses the problem? What's the problem? It's confusing. There's a million manufacturers. There's a million options. There's all this insider language. Don't worry about that. Our team will make it easy to replace your fireplace, and you can click right here to get an online estimate. There's clarity, and there's an explanation of the problem and the solution. One of the things that's tough in our industry too, again, like we have all this insider language, which isn't bad, but you know, my goodness, if we arrange our websites based on fireplace and insert and gas log, customers don't know what that stuff means. So as a retailer, of course people come in looking at the wrong things because they saw some sweet linear fireplace online. They think it's awesome, but they got a 36-inch wide brick opening. So why on earth would we not build a filter system so that people can be somewhat qualified for which products will work in their space so that we can set a proper expectation? Okay, I want to show you something else here. As we're trying to move from playing defense to offense, we've got to keep the focus on our customer. And I want to give you an example of a swing and a miss. And I literally saw this piece of marketing as I was flying out here. Bad marketing focuses on your company. Bad marketing focuses on your company. Effective marketing focuses on your customer. And that's an important shift we have to make. Our marketing should never, ever, ever make us the focus of the story. All we are is we are an advisor that can help our clients solve their problem. And when we position ourselves as an advisor, all of a sudden people want to work with us. When we position ourselves as the focus, again, like, I mean, just look at this. This is an ad for Delta Airlines. They paid a lot of money for some smart person to make this, but this is what appreciation looks like. Who's the focus of that ad? I mean, it's not their customer. It's like, oh great, like I'm sure I'm glad you think that highly of yourself, you know? This is what appreciation looks like. Thank you for flying with us. And they're thinking, oh my gosh, we're thanking our customers. We're thanking them. But yet, like, they can't hold back the self-indulgence. And this is what we often do in our advertising. So that one of the fundamental questions we want to ask in any piece of marketing, any piece of copy, any piece of advertising, is my business the focus? And if my business is the focus, don't do it. Instead, think about how can my business be positioned as someone to help my customer solve their problem, and all of a sudden marketing starts to work. I'm going kind of deep on this, and I want you to humor me just a little bit more. But this, you might look at it and think, man, is that like a classified ad from 1985? And you're basically right. So this is, I'm going to name names when I think things are done really, really well. This is an ad that Valor ran back in, I think it was like 1985, 1986, maybe it was in the 90s. Ironically, this was published in a magazine article that was about, look how far we've come from this silly stuff back in the 80s. And they had this little snippet, and I saw this, and I'm like, dude, this is some of the best marketing copy I've ever read in my life. And think about this, okay? We call this Valor's direct vent system. You'll call it the moneymaker. Who's the focus of that? Oh, yeah, I mean, we got this little thing. Don't worry about what we call it. You're going to call it the moneymaker. Now, you can argue, is moneymaker too clever or not? But, like, that's pretty good. The focus isn't on them. This is a builder's dream come true. At last, a quality, fully functional, high-efficiency gas fireplace that vents through any suitable outside wall is available without the need for a conventional chimney. Does that help solve the builder's problem if they've been used to building chimneys their whole life? Think of the possibilities in condos, in apartments, in renovations, in new homes, almost anywhere. If you're a builder, what's going through your mind? Like, whoa, okay. Like, yeah, Nate's doing the money sign. Like, okay. Builders, you're not going to believe installing a gas fireplace is this easy. No chase construction, no electrical connections, no chimney. All you need is a hole in the wall and a gas line. Everything else is in one convenient kit. Does that solve a builder's problem? Dude, I mean, we're cooking with gas. With the Valor Direct Vent system, you can install the fireplace at any time during the construction process. Think about it for a moment. You can even leave the fireplace out and then offer all three designs as an option to buyer once the property's been sold. Who's the focus of this? Is Valor and how amazing they are the focus of this? You see what I'm saying? It's the builder. Dude, if I'm the builder, I'm reading this and going, are you kidding me? I mean, I can put this thing, I don't even have to put it in. I can just leave space for it, and afterwards I can sell it as an upsell. And if they decide at the last minute, even after sheetrock's in, that they want a fireplace, we can do it. The point of this is that this is what we've gotten away from. And you can argue, oh yeah, it's hokey and the advertising looks cheesy. Fine, touche. But if someone reads this, it is for a specific customer to address their specific problem. And do you see how much better this makes Valor look than Valor makes the highest quality direct vent fireplaces in the industry. Straight out of British Columbia, we've been working hard for 30 years to serve our customers. You know what I'm saying? You see how much more, like, this makes them look like a genius because it's not about them. They are only around to help their builders solve their problem. Does that distinction make sense? Okay. I mean, and truly, like, I saw this and I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's an absolute gem in how to write really good sales copy. Again, bad marketing focuses on your company. Effective marketing focuses on your customers. So this is an example of a company, and guess what they sell? Do you notice anything interesting about the sunglasses? It's maybe different than a normal pair. Do you see? Yeah, yeah. What do you see? Yeah, and here, look at this. Do you notice that, like, they're on a string? So this company's called Stringies. They're a sunglasses company. And a couple things to think about really quickly, and then we're gonna move on to the next part of this. But I want to talk about marketing, because this is how we move from defense to offense. This is how we bring our product to the customer. So if you had to guess, who's the target demographic for Stringies? How would you know that? Yeah, totally, they're outdoors. Now, if you think about this, these are pictures of people living life, right? I mean, you know, that lady, she's having a blast on the mountain bike ride. This guy's at the beach. This guy's just hanging out, having a good time. They're enjoying life with the product. And what you notice, though, is that there's people in all these pictures. They didn't take a pair of sunglasses and put a white background up against it and take some really nice studio pictures. So people can really see the inlays of the sunglasses. That's really what sets them apart. And the string is a unique thing because the frames don't break. So they didn't go and set these up somewhere. Like, but that's how we treat fireplaces. We take fireplaces and we put them in a cold, empty room. We put a bad Photoshop flamed on it and we take pictures and we wonder why no one's compelled to buy these things. You know? I mean, it'd look horrible if they approached sunglasses in the way that in many ways we've approached fireplaces. Now, on top of that, what I want to read you is an example of their marketing message. So with this company, this is truly their marketing message. And this comes from a framework that is called building a story brand. And any piece of marketing that they do has got to be run through this filter. And if it doesn't resonate with this filter, it does not get written, it does not get published. Here's their message. We know you're an outdoor enthusiast who cares about the environment and wants gear that lasts longer. The problem is that most sunglasses today are made in overseas sweatshops by companies that are destroying the environment, which makes you feel angry to be a cog in the wheel of these giant corporations. And that's just wrong. Because no one should exploit your love of the outdoors for profit at the expense of the environment. Now, we know how it feels to be angry at the lack of transparency in the supply chain. That's why our sunglasses are responsibly made in the United States from sustainable materials like wood and algae. Our supply chain has complete transparency. Our sunglasses are built to last a minimum of 10 years, even with the most active use, and our simplified design uses a string to eliminate failure points produced by sidearms of traditional sunglasses. We can help you find an amazing pair of sunglasses that are durable, incredibly comfortable, and sustain our environment. Here's how you do it. Step one, choose your frame style. Step two, pick a string and lens color. Step three, order your custom sunglasses. So click here to buy now. And in the meantime, download our video series, Fighting Back Against the Evil Sunglass Empire. Stop buying sunglasses that are killing our planet. Rather, join the bio-based revolution. Wear the most durable sunglasses you've ever owned. Experience how incredible arm-free eyewear feels and feel comfortable that you're part of our planet's solution. What sticks out to you in that message? What's their mission? Save the environment. Yeah. What's the problem that they're helping their customers solve? What's the problem? Who's the enemy in this?
Companies making sunglasses in overseas sweatshops.
Dude, 100%. And look at this line. That's just wrong because no one should exploit your love of the outdoors for profit at the expense of the environment. Think about how powerful that line is. If you're their target customer. If you're not an outdoor enthusiast, is this message for you? Nope, and they are just fine with that because they know who their customer is. And this is a message for them. A message for everyone is a message for no one. We gotta stand up and decide who is our customer and make sure our marketing is targeted specifically for them. Okay, we're gonna move on from marketing and I wanna talk next about our websites. So marketing is the first step in moving from defense to offense and figuring out how do we bring our products to the customer. So next is our websites. So our websites are the front door of our webpage. You can tell I'm tired of them. They're the front door of our business. For anyone that's coming into contact with us, they're the front door. And we should primarily, even as a retail brick and mortar business, we should primarily view ourselves as a digital company first and a physical company second. It doesn't mean the showroom goes away. The showroom is incredibly important, and I believe in a showroom model because I'm going to talk about that in a second. But that's not the first stop. Digital is our first impression, and our websites need to answer two questions. Any guesses as to what one of the questions when a consumer goes to your website has? I would say any consumer who's considering a fireplace, when they go to your website, there's two fundamental questions they have. Can anybody guess what one of those questions is? What's that?
Ease of use.
Ease of use? Yeah, that's a good thought. What else?
Where are you at?
That's great too. Who are you? Okay. But there's something like much more. What's that?
Yes.
How much does it cost? Right? How much does it cost? I mean, isn't that kind of logical? Like if you go to buy a new car and you go to the vehicle dealer's website, would you expect a price of the vehicle on the website? What if the company said, well, come visit us in the showroom and we'll get you a custom estimate? Are you going to go visit that? Yeah, you're not going to visit. No way. No way you're visiting that dealership. I'm not saying this is easy. I'm just saying that this is the consumer experience and we have to decide what we do about it, okay? So that's one is, yeah, I mean, how much does it cost? Okay, let's look at both of these in detail. The first question customers have is which options will work in my space? They really do. If they already knew what would work in their space, they'd probably have already bought it online. That's the reality. They'd probably have already bought it online. But the reason they're coming to your website and the reason they're coming into a showroom is they generally want to know, hey, I'm looking for a wood stove. Which one of these can work in my space? And this is where our value comes in, because we can talk to them about their project and nuance it out in a way that, you know, just straight e-commerce can't. So every customer wants to know which options will work in my space. But how are most websites arranged? Zero clearance fireplaces, inserts, gas logs, vent free. And does the customer know what those things mean? No, they don't know what they mean. So they start clicking on stuff and they get all pumped up just for the wrong expectation to be set in the showroom. So we got to figure out how we do this. And I would argue that we can actually build like really simple filters that use language our customers understand to present our products, you know? When we use language that makes sense to us but not our customers, it's not effective, you know? Like if we all speak French and our customers speak English, why would we have our websites be in French? Like, we should think about the way that consumers talk about and understand our products.
We'll get back to our conversation with Brian Barnhill in just one second. Hey, if you were at the 2024 HPB Expo, then you know we just launched our third edition of the FireTime Journal. Now, every year for the last 3 years, at the time of the HPB Expo, we have released a printed journal that's about 150 pages long, and it's based on the 8 departments of a hearth retailer. Now, we gave this away to tons of people at the trade show, but if you missed out and want to get a copy of it, we want to make that available to you as well. To get your copy of the 2024 FireTime Journal, you can go to the website, itsfiretime.com/journal, and you can go ahead and order one. Now, when you go to the website, you'll see that you can also order either of the journals from the last 2 years. So as long as supply lasts on those, you can order all three if you've missed out on all of them or any of the ones that you didn't get. Over the last 3 years at the trade show, every single year without fail, someone comes to get one of these journals and literally tells me this is one of the main reasons I flew out to this trade show is to get this journal. So don't sleep on this content. It is absolutely fantastic. I'm really honored to be a part of putting this out because the contributors who write these articles are absolutely incredible. So if you missed out on your copy of the journal at the trade show, or you want to order some from your team, just go to the website, itsfiretime.com/journal, and order yours today. That's itsfiretime.com/journal.
This is hard because there's so much variability in what we do, right? And some companies think that, well, we'll just show a starting app price or a fireplace only price. But that doesn't work. Anyone in retail knows that, right? Because if someone goes in and sees a $3,500 price on the website, how much is it when they come into your showroom and they add labor and they add a vent kit, they add a permit, they add framing? That $3,500 turns into $8,000. Is that customer pumped on that bait and switch? No. And we make all the excuses. Well, we don't know the vent pipe, or we're a manufacturer. We don't sell the vent pipe, so we can't take control of that. Dude, I don't care. It's the customer experience. And we can't argue with their experience, you know? It'd be like if we went online, so you're gonna buy a car, and let's pretend that your budget was, say, $15,000, okay? So you go online, you find this car that's in your price range. So you drive down to the dealership, and you go test drive it, and you go to say, hey, I think I wanna buy this. And they go, perfect, let's get that estimate all finalized. And they bring it back to you, and it's $24,000. And you're like, what? And they're like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, you know, online, it didn't include the engine, and it didn't include the hood, and it didn't include the seat belts. There's a lot of variability, and every engine's a little bit different. So we just bid you out for the chassis of the car itself. What's the customer think? Get out of here. Like, now, I'm not saying this is easy. I'm just saying this is the world our customers are living in, and we have to adapt to it. There's a lot of ways to do it. I would highly recommend putting price ranges on your website for your different product categories. They can be a wide range, but put price ranges for your average installation so a customer at least has some kind of an idea. Because when you can set that pricing anchor early, it's amazing how that draws them into your store. Because no one else does it accurately, you know? And then when they go into your store and you're within the range that you talked about, you're doing what you said you'd do, and the expectation is starting to build momentum versus the bait and switch of either, I have no idea what it costs, or, well, I think it's $3,500, just to find out it's actually $6,500. So I'm not saying this is easy, but I'm saying on our websites we have to address this because it's our first point of contact with the customer. And again, I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it. I believe in price ranges. Put price ranges on everything on your website. As a manufacturer, go figure out what's the average vent kit cost, what's the average labor cost. Throw a $2,000 range on it, I don't care. But do something to set the proper expectation for the customer so that we're drawing them to the next step as opposed to alienating them from the next step. Any retailer in here, raise your hand if you had to deal with a situation like this where you have bad expectations set on price. Yeah, it happens. Okay. On our websites, we want to use calls to action, CTAs, that bring our products to the customer. Learn more is not a call to action that brings our product to the customer. Contact us is not something that's helpful. Because again, no customer wants to contact us. What they want is to get my estimate, right? Schedule appointment.
book video call. We want to use calls to action all over our website that draw customers into the next step, because this can start to create a qualified lead, right? As you work with manufacturers and marketing companies, the most valuable thing they can do is deliver you leads, delivering you leads to act on, because that's where your team can start to go to work. So use calls to action that bring your products to the customer. As an example of that, I would highly recommend scheduling in-home appointments, showroom appointments, and even service calls over the internet. I would highly recommend it. And I know there's complexity there. We can talk about that offline if you want. There's complexity. But if you just think about the customer experience, it's 11 at night, their fireplace is broken, and they're watching Netflix, right? And they're on the internet, and everybody has a contact us button that goes into the black hole. And one company has a schedule service appointment button. They'll whip out their card and they'll pay $250 for it. I mean, and there's ways we can talk about protecting the schedule and everything, but in many ways, I think that we've fallen asleep at the wheel because people have kept coming in. You know, the last like 3 years has been so busy. It's like, just try to make sure the boat doesn't sink. There's so many fish jumping in. And we're kind of getting caught with our pants down as the tide's going out, you know? This is how we start to play offense. I want to show you some examples of websites that I think do a really, really good job. So this is the CarMax site from a little while ago. CarMax gets us home together. As you look at this, as you read the copy on it, what does CarMax help you do based on this? What do they help you do? Save time? Yeah. What's the picture communicate? Yeah. Yeah. And what's the family doing? Getting ready for vacation. Is the focus of the picture how amazing CarMax is? What's the focus? It's the family.
The people.
Yeah. I don't even know what model car that is. I mean, it's like the worst profile for a car, right? I mean, everything is, I can't see anything. But that doesn't matter. What's their call to action? Find your car. Find your car. Here's another one. CarMax gets me more adventures. Find your car. I was going to use a bad example from our industry, but I'm gonna skip it because I think it would be too incriminating. So this one's less incriminating. Okay, so right here, here's an example. I'll say first of all, this is a website that visually looks nice. It's clean. Colors are nice. There's good contrast. It's a nice-looking website. I would say it's a very good-looking website. What problem does this solve for their customers?
If you have a really big chest piece.
Yeah. That's right. You can balance it out with your fireplace. I love that, Patrick. Yeah. How do they make your life better? What are they trying to get you to do? How do you take action to move to the next step? One of the problems that we think is that just because a website looks nice means it's effective. And I would say that's a really dangerous trap. No joke, I don't have it as part of this presentation. I can show it to you afterwards. The TSA PreCheck website from like 5 years ago is one of the best sales websites I have ever seen. And it looks, dude, it looks not great. It's text heavy, colors are awkward, but dude, the way that they do their calls to action, the way that they explain their service, it's a lightning rod to get you to get TSA PreCheck. And if most of us looked at it here, we'd laugh at it and go, that silly website. I think it sells a lot more than a website like this. So it's not about how nice it looks. It's about how does it address those two problems that our customer has. So I want to show you some websites here that I really like. Again, I blanked out the company's name. As an example here, what does this company help your family do? Safe and warm all winter. Chimney service and fireplace sales for families in, and then it lists their area that they serve. Now, how do you take action to take the next step on this website? I can browse fireplaces or get my estimate. Do you see? Will you date me? Will you marry me? Hey, if you just want to date, no, browse fireplaces. If you want to take this to the next step, do you see how it's meeting the customer where they are on their terms? You know, as you keep going, here's a great example of some copy as well. Most chimneys aren't safe. It can be a major problem for your home. Why? Chimney fires, water leaks, smoke back into the home, deterioration. No one should feel unsafe in their own home. We make it easy to get your chimney serviced and get it off your to-do list. What's my call to action? Schedule appointment. Do you guys see how this website is addressing the problem and it's moving the customer towards the solution? Even though they can't physically bring the product right now at this point in time, they're doing what they can to move the customer to the next step and bring their product to them. Well, where do I start? Step one, get an online estimate for your fireplace project. Step two, schedule a free in-home visit. Step three, safe and easy installation of your fireplace. Call to action, get online estimate. Testimonial, recentist crew did an awesome job installing my wood-burning stove. Their work was very clean and done in a timely manner. I would highly recommend them. Do you see how this is intentionally working to ease the customer's doubts and fears and bring their product to the customer every step? Okay, I got the God-given gift of over-making a point. Let's look at a couple more. Don't risk the safety of your family by letting your chimney go another year without being serviced. Rather, get my estimate. Have peace of mind. Make sure your family's safe this winter. Add value back to your home. Okay, one more. Be confident to use your fireplace. Know your fireplace is safe. Keep your family warm in the winter. Enjoy a beautiful home. Schedule appointment. Now, truly, I'm not joking. All of these pages are on the same website. So think about, like, anywhere you go on that website, you've got a message straight for the customer with a call to action showing how we, right now at 2 a.m, we can start taking steps to bring this to you. This is what we have to do with our websites, manufacturers, distributors, and retailers alike. We need to contextualize this for who our customer is and how we serve them, but this is how we start to move from playing defense to playing offense. Any questions about websites before we jump into our showrooms as the final piece? Any questions about website? Okay, I'm not saying this is easy. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying it's necessary. Because if we don't do it, someone else is gonna. If we don't do it, someone else is gonna. We are already, as an industry, dying the death of 1,000 cuts. It's already started. And it's up to us to say, no, we're gonna respond to the market. It doesn't mean we're gonna just roll over and become Amazon and become a commodity and race to the bottom. That's not what this is. But we can meet our customers where they're at and show them our value. And by us respecting the customer enough to offer them a buying experience in the way that they want, that will start to help our business. And it doesn't mean that our showrooms don't matter. I think that our showrooms matter more than ever. As you guys know, having a physical brick and mortar presence in your community sets you apart from anybody else on the internet. It really does. Peace of mind, warranty, professional installation, these things matter. But if you present yourself as significantly harder to buy from, none of that stuff matters. They'll just buy on the internet. So we have to take steps to make it easier so that when all things are equal, they choose us because we're local and we can take care of them. So let's talk about our showrooms. First off, our showrooms need an intentional sales process. A little bit later today, I'm going to be teaching a class specifically on the 7 steps of the retail sales process. Now, the process I'm going to teach, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's the only process. I'm just saying it's what's worked for me and the stores that I've managed. So my hope is that it will help you too. The point is that every showroom needs a sales process. And the reason why is a quote from my good friend, Tim Rethlake. I don't know if you've heard this before. A room full of salespeople is like a room full of monkeys. Nearly every act is random. Usually I get a laugh in that. I mean, isn't that kind of funny? A room full of salespeople is like a room full of monkeys. Nearly every act is random. And this is, I've been this person, right? I mean, I go back almost 20 years in the industry. I have been this salesperson. What am I doing? Oh, I don't know. I guess I'll ask them some questions. Do I think this is the fireplace or this one? Oh, I really like this one over here. This one's pretty cool. Yeah. And should we go out for this one for an in-home visit? I don't know if we need to. Why don't you bring me some pictures? Well, no, how about instead of pictures, let's actually book that in-home visit. Like when we have no sales process, we don't know what to do. And a sales process in no way, shape, or form removes the humanity from your team. Rather, it paints lines on the court so we know what game we're playing. It's not micromanagement. It's just simply, how do we at our company sell fireplaces? So when someone's hired on day one, they should know, hey, you know, we're so excited that you're here with our company and that you're going to join the sales team. And we're going to go through some training over the next 6 weeks, especially just to get you familiar with how we do it. I know you've had some sales experience before, but I'd like to explain how we sell fireplaces here at XYZ Fireplace Store. That's pretty reasonable, isn't it? Yeah, so the way that we do it, we have a pretty simple process. You know, step one is we greet the customer. Step two, we take the time to understand their problem. Step three, we advise a solution. Step four, we explain the process of what's going to happen on their job. Step five, we call them to action. Step six, we pursue the opportunity. And then step seven, at the end, we show gratitude to our customers. So over the next 6 weeks, we'll take some time on each of those steps just so you feel real comfortable with the way that we sell fireplaces here. Is that micromanagement? Dude, it's just freaking clarity. Oh, okay. I guess, yeah, so I should learn how to greet the customer effectively. Before I show them a fireplace, I should take the time to understand their problem. That's what a sales process starts to do for us. We'll go really, really deep on that in a little bit. But what a sales process does, it allows you to set proper expectations for your customers. Because without a process, we're monkeys just doing whatever. Did I set the right expectation? I don't know. I don't remember how I did it. Well, the next one, I'll do my best. It allows us to set proper expectations. It moves us from playing defense to playing offense, because when someone comes in the store, we value them. We actively know how to help them move from A to B to C so that they can solve their problem. And it helps us train new team members to sell more faster. It really, really does. You know, I've seen team members with a documented sales process that, you know, year one are $350,000, year two, $850,000, year three, $1.2 million. Like, that's not a bad growth arc. We've seen people in their first year sell over $1 million. And it doesn't guarantee, a sales process in no way, shape, or form guarantees top performance. But you know what a sales process will do? It will help your best people produce better results. Like, no joke, your best people will probably produce 25 to 30% more. And it will take people who are C and D players, and it will give them a bump in their results. You know, if you got someone that's selling $400,000, a sales process will probably bump them to 550, maybe even 600. You can decide if that's adequate performance or not, but your team will actually start to gravitate towards it because there's an expectation set. So often, whether you're a manufacturer, retailer, or distributor, we don't set the right expectations for our team. We get mad at them when they don't sell enough, and then when they need to sell more, we say, well, why don't you sell more? What's that mean? I mean, apply more pressure? I don't know what that means. But when we have a sales process, we can say, hey, we got to sell more. And I think where we're missing the mark has to do with step two, the way that we're taking the time to understand the customer's problem. Let's really go to work on this and figure out how can we start to understand the customer's problem better. Now we can start to grow sales. That makes sense? So we'll go deep on this a little bit later. We need to make sure we always give customers a path to move from A to B, right? So here's an example of a pretty simple path. Store to an in-home visit to an install truck to a fireplace. That's an example of a path that a customer can follow. And we want to be crystal clear in this. We want to explain to every single customer that comes into our showrooms, how do they do business with us? What are the things that need to happen to solve their problem? Because one of the mistakes in our industry is that we have been trained to sell products, but we don't sell products. We sell solutions to our customers' problems. And when we change our mentality in our showrooms, instead of thinking, oh, this is the new model, we got a couple in the barn, let me talk to a customer about it because I'm comfortable with it. When we change our mentality from that to, let me focus on exactly what Patrick is saying so I can really understand his problem. I'm going to find a solution for him. Whether that's me, the competition, a service call, or a fireplace, I'm going to find a solution for him. All of a sudden, we become better salespeople. Because we're focused on the solution, not on the product. The product will work itself out. In so many situations, dude, I don't care. I don't care what brands you sell. I don't care what's on the floor. Product will work itself out. It'll work itself out. If I take the time to understand the customer's problem, it'll work itself out. But when I'm focused on product first, oh, this has five different decorative fronts. It's got a direct vent system, which means the intake air comes from the outside and the exhaust gets pushed out, sealed combustion, which is really efficient for you. This has insert proprietary name for IPI system, that this has this thing in it. And when we talk that way, we're so product focused that customers are like, what? Now, as an example of this, I was secret shopping one time in the Midwest, and I went to a showroom, and this showroom is one of the number one, if not the number one, retailer for this particular manufacturer that they sell. And they sell a number of good products, a number of really good manufacturers. And I was secret shopping, and the salesperson didn't take a lot of time to understand my problem, and as a result, we had to look at a million products. We're bouncing all over the showroom because didn't take the time to understand my problem. So anytime I go, oh, well, could that work? Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, it does this and this and this and this and this. Oh, okay, man. Hey, well, what about that? Like, that's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, well, this is this, and it does this and this. And we're bouncing all over the showroom. So we're in for about 25 minutes. I can tell that, like, starting to lose some steam. And eventually, he kind of trails off, and it gets a little awkward. And he looks at me, and he goes, so what's the next step? And I'm like, I'm the customer. I hoped that you would know what the next step was. You know, the point is that that's when we're product focused. We need to be solution focused. Okay, so as I said, being solution focused is not the typical process in our industry. I've got two numbers for you, 20 and zero. Any guesses what those numbers indicate? I mean, it's a no-win question. How could you guess? They could mean anything. Okay, I'll tell you here. So off the top of my head, I counted 20 stores I've secret shopped in a number of major markets across the U.S. over the last 3 years. And that was just off the top of my head. Anytime I go to a new market, I try to secret shop, you know, 2 to 5 retailers and just see how it's going. 20 stores secret shopped, 0 estimates written. And this is not going in throwing curveballs. This is going in describing my house, you know, 36-inch fireplace, 24 inches high, made of brick, gas line in the fireplace. 0 estimates. And these are not slouch businesses. These are legit businesses that do a lot of revenue, and they sell really good products. And if you think about this, like, these are all pictures from different secret shopping experiences. This is in Cincinnati. That's in Buffalo, and I forget where that one is. No, that's in Buffalo too. So when we think about this, it's not that I'm sure if I went into these businesses and said, hey, I want to buy this product, they could have helped me. And they would have written it up. But as Dave Rettinger says, what about the customer that is on the fence? Because there's a million of them, and we lose them. If they're coming in to buy, like, literally, if a customer's coming in and they give you money the first time that they're in the showroom, they were coming in to buy anyway. And it's up to you to lose the sale. So it's like, I mean, like, good job, I wrote the order up. Anybody that's not rude with a pulse probably could have done it. It's the people who come in that have legitimate questions, who don't have to buy because they're on the fence or there's fear or there's resistance. That's what we need to move the needle on. But to me, it's so staggering that in the last 3 years, there's not been one estimate written up for me. Not an offer. The only time, I say 3 years, if I go back 4 years, there was one business in Seattle, Washington that wrote me up an estimate. And it was because I physically wouldn't leave. I wouldn't leave. And eventually the salesperson was like, so do you want me to write up a quote for this? And I was like, oh yeah, that'd be great. And she asked me my name. I gave her my name. She asked me my address. I gave her my address. But I don't live in Seattle, Washington. I live in Portland, Oregon. And she, here's my address. And she goes, wait, you live in Portland? I'm like, yeah, is that a problem? I mean, I'd been there for 35 minutes. There's no question about, hey, where do you live? Where's the project at? What stage are you? There's none of that. So we'll talk more about this in our class on the sales process. But I don't think these numbers lie. I don't think that they lie. What happens to the customers who are on the fence? In this, we want to shift our business model to an in-home sales model. We really, really do. It doesn't mean the showroom goes away. The showroom is the anchor of your business. But we want to shift to an in-home sales model. And I'll tell you, like, we can talk about this afterwards, and I'm up for debate on it. But, dude, I'll go out and do in-home visits blind all day long. Someone calls on the phone, perfect. Web inquiry, I'm there. All day long. I don't care. Now, I'll give you a little bit of qualification on that. The amazing thing about the phone is that you can treat a customer as if they're standing in your showroom. And you can ask all the questions you'd ask in the showroom. You can talk about fireplaces that could work. You can literally even send them a bid over the phone and say, hey, I just emailed this to you. Why don't you take a look at it? That's like the ballpark range of where these projects fall. You're probably going to be somewhere between whatever your price range is, you know, probably $7,000 to $8,500. And we can come out next week. So if you spent 10 minutes on the phone with the customer, asking them questions about their project, you've talked about fireplace models, you sent them a ballpark range of $7,000 to $8,500, and they say, hey, can you come out to my house next week? Like, doesn't it make sense that we go out to the house next week? We can do the same thing on the internet. But here's the thing with in-home visits, and I personally believe in doing in-home visits for free. If you charge, that's okay. I would consider loosening the net, though, especially with where the economy is. You know, last 3 years, I get it. It's more than we can handle. But I would consider loosening the net and doing free in-home visits. And the reason is, an effective in-home salesperson should close 70 to 80% of the time in the home. If you've got a process for in-home sales, they will close 70 to 80%, especially if they turn that estimate around in the home. If they turn that final estimate around in the home, you sit down at the coffee table, the people have taken time off of work, they're ready to do this. If they're not ready, what you do is you call the office to check your next available installation date. You give it to them and you say, you know, we can hold that for 24 hours. I totally get you want to sleep on it. Think about it. Let me just give you a call tomorrow just after you've had a chance to talk to your wife about it just to make sure that you don't want this date before it goes to somebody else. That's not high pressure. If they want to do it now, we can help them now. 24-hour hold is magic. It inserts urgency and scarcity. And those are powerful, powerful levers in the sales process, urgency and scarcity. Okay, in-home visits. Should close 70 to 80% of the time if the customer has been qualified on the price range of the project previously. I know it's difficult, but if we take some time and ask some questions, it can happen. You'll close 70 to 80% of the time if the estimate is completed on site. I'm not saying you can't win sales if it's turned around later, but I'm saying your percentage of a chance to close significantly drops. The time to complete the estimate is on site, even if it takes an extra 30 minutes, 40 minutes, you can bake it into the expectation that this is going to happen. And then the customer needs to be given an installation date on the spot. If you can do those things, it is amazing how in-home sales work for us. I'll tell you a story as we start to wrap up here. So a while back, we had a customer that we were calling to follow up on a proposal. And we called to see if they wanted to buy, and they said, oh, you know, we're getting another bid. We have someone coming out to our house on Friday, so we're gonna wait to make a decision until we get that bid. And so we said, hey, that's no problem at all. Like, you know, I got a couple bids on my roof. I totally get that. Would it be okay if I called you on Saturday to just check on how the bids look? So we call on Saturday. Now, I don't remember the days of the week, but we called the next day. And we said, hey, just wanted to check in to see how our estimate looked versus the company that you had out and just see if there's any discrepancies or questions you want to talk about. Well, yeah, they came out, but they weren't able to give us the estimate then. Now, we were able to give them the estimate on site. They weren't able to give you the estimate on site. No, they said that they have to go back and you know, crunch some of the numbers and put it together. Okay, did they tell you when you're going to get the bid? Well, yeah, they said that we should have it by Tuesday. Okay, cool. Well, would it be okay if I gave you a call maybe on like Thursday? You have a couple days to look at both of them and that way, you know, you can decide if ours is different or better. They said, sure. So call them back on Thursday. Hey, this is Tim calling with XYZ Fireplaces and I'm just checking back in on this project, just seeing how the bid looked that you got. Oh, well, you know, they didn't send us the bid yet. We called them and they said that they're working on it. They said they're working on it? Didn't they say they'd get it to you by Thursday? The people bought on the phone right there. Now, I'm not bad-mouthing the company. I'm just holding them accountable to what they said they would do for their customer. But when you think about that rhythm of we complete the bid on site at the in-home sale, and then we call to follow up on it. They tell us when they're going to get the bid. So we say, well, would it be okay if I called you on this day? And then we call them on that day. And the company hasn't done what they said they were going to do. Hey, that's no problem. When do you think it'll be done? Okay, would it be okay if I called you on that day? What have we done every step of the way? We've asked for permission, but there's something that they have not done every step of the way that we have done. We did what we said we were going to do, right? We did what we said we were. Every time we say, well, we're still working on the bid, I'm sorry, we'll get it back to you. Well, we can't give you an installation date yet because we don't have a ETA on the product. We'll talk about scheduling later. I believe everything needs to be scheduled upon purchase, upon purchase of the customer, not when we get it in from the manufacturer. We can talk about that. But every single time we are not able to do what we said we were going to do, it makes a mark on the customer. And eventually we might win the job, but if something goes wrong, we got a time bomb on our hands because we failed to meet expectations every step of the way, and then this is the straw that breaks the camel's back. Versus meeting expectations every step of the way, if something goes wrong, there's a lot more grace in that. So in-home sales is something that I would really focus on. I would recommend applying the same process of sales towards an in-home model. One of the mistakes that we make is we think that we're going out to estimate a job. And by estimating a job, it means, well, I'll go out to see if this wood stove will work. I'll go measure it up. And I've done that a lot. I've made a million mistakes on this. Because I go measure up the wood stove. Oh, yeah, we'll get the, there's a lot of parts. It'll take a couple days, but put the bid together. So we'll go, you know, we'll put it together later. You go back to the office, you get hit with a freight train. This customer's not top of mind anymore. And then by the time I start putting it together, my notes aren't quite as clear as I thought. My pictures aren't exactly the way that I need them to be. So I make a couple guesses. I'm late. And then the installers go out there and something's wrong on it, right? Versus taking care of it when I'm in the moment and I can do that. I've made this mistake a million times. But in-home sales, while it can add a level of complexity to your business because the person going out needs to be able to put together a final price, call for an installation date, and ask the customer if they'd like to buy, while that adds a layer of complexity, it will make a huge shift in your business from forcing customers to come to you to bringing your product to the customer. And that's what we want to do. So as we round out here, we've talked about these three things, how if we want to win the way that Blockbuster didn't, we need to start with our marketing, our websites, and then our showrooms, and ask the question, in every way, how can we bring our products and our business to the customer? Herb Keller said that our company, and he had Keller Williams Realty was his company, and he said that we need to think about our company as a digital company first, and a physical company second. That's the way that we need to think about our company. And I would argue the same thing, because this is where the search starts, and this is what we're up against. We're not competing against the website of the local dealer down the street. We're competing against Toyota's website. We're held to the same standard as Amazon. So it doesn't matter if we laugh and scoff at how bad theirs looks. We're getting crushed, because we lose jobs not to the competitor down the street. We lose jobs to the car purchase, to the kitchen remodel, to the vacation, and to doing nothing. Years ago in my showroom, we spent some time analyzing and tracking where we were winning and where we were losing jobs. And we found that we lost jobs 4-1 to indecision over competition. 4-1. We were losing jobs because we were confusing people out of buying a fireplace. We weren't following up the way that we should. We weren't meeting our own expectations. We're not losing to the competitor down the street. So our marketing needs to be clear and connected. Our websites have to answer the two critical questions, and our showrooms have to move customers from A to B. Now remember, in the year 2000, 23 years ago, Blockbuster Video had the opportunity to buy a small fledgling company called Netflix, and they chose not to. They believed their existing business model of playing defense, making the customer come to us, having a great showroom, awesome customer service, good displays, a physical presence. They believed that that defensive model alone would triumph over the Netflix model of bringing the product to the customer. But that doesn't have to be true for our industry. We can be the ones to take that baton that's been handed to us, and we can move it forward. We can set our websites up to meet customers where they're at and make it easy for them. We can have marketing that is clear and connected and speaks straight to the customer, and we can have showrooms that set us apart from anybody online because of the care and intentionality of our sales team, if we think it's worth it. So thank you guys. It's been awesome being here, and I'm excited for the next two classes.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that keynote. It was really cool to be out in Pennsylvania delivering that message. And, you know, as we talked about throughout the keynote, I think that a mistake to make is to think that just because the market is changing and technology is evolving means that you need to throw out everything you've done, jump onto the latest trends, whether that's AI or flash in the pan marketing, whatever it is, because you got to get with the times. That is not at all what I mean. I believe that companies need to understand the waters they're swimming in and respond to the market. Now, I do believe that wisdom would say we have to change our companies to bring our product to the customer rather than have them come to us. But you might decide something different. The point is that you understand how the market is changing and you intentionally define how you will respond to that and why you've chosen to respond that way. So whether you choose to respond with the way your website works, as we talked about during the keynote, whether you choose to respond with the sales process that your team uses to engage customers, or whether this has to do with your approach to in-home visits and estimates, my encouragement would be for you to respond because the market has changed. Well, hey, if this episode today was a blessing for you and you want to support it financially, you can do that by going to the website patreon.com/itsfiretime. That's patreon.com/itsfiretime. And like I said at the beginning of the episode, this is part one of a two-part mini-series where I'm going to share next week a class I taught at this same event that's about building a framework of sales management. And my hope is that listening to these two in parallel gives you some inspiration and some tactical steps that you can take to respond to the market in a way that serves your customers and serves your business. So with that said, I'm going to step out of the way. I hope you guys have an amazing week, and we'll talk again very soon. Thank you for listening to the Firetime Podcast. To learn more, visit the website itsfiretime.com. Music from this episode was written and recorded by In Bloom out of Portland, Oregon. We thank you for listening to the Firetime Podcast, where it's never hot enough, slow is fast, and the way to win is to make it so stupidly easy to buy from you that there's no excuse not to. We'll see you next time. All in to burn.